Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India.
Absolutely, there's a reason you're all here. Everything that happens in our life, everything, happens for a reason. And everything happens for our own spiritual growth and unfolding. Now, that doesn't mean it all feels good. Let me give you an example. Let's say that you are in school and you've made a choice that you are just going to goof around. You don't like to do schoolwork. You would much rather play football and video games. And so you don't do your homework and you lie to your mother and father every time they ask if you've done your homework. And you say yes, but actually you don't do it, and you just goof around, and you play with your friends, and you skip school, and you don't even go to class, and you hang around, and okay. Well, at the end of the year, you're going to fail. And when you fail, you have to redo that year. If you're in fifth grade or sixth grade or whatever grade you're in, if you don't pass, you can't go on to the next year. You have to redo that year. So now if we pop into your life at that moment where you have failed sixth grade, let's say, and you say, well, did that happen for a reason? Well, yeah, it did. The reason was that you made a choice about 10 months ago that you were going to goof around and not take school seriously. And as the repercussion of that, you have failed. But it's actually for a higher purpose, which is you need to learn the material. It's not that the school is punishing you. It's not that they said you are a bad boy. You goofed around. You didn't come to class. Therefore, as a vindictive punishment, we are going to make you redo that year. No. They're not being vindictive. They're not trying to punish you. The school has one agenda and one agenda only, which is you should learn the material. So before you can go on to seventh grade, you must learn the material of sixth grade. And so making you redo sixth grade is ultimately for your unfoldment, your growth. Because if you didn't redo it, you would never learn what sixth grade had to offer. You would go your entire life never knowing all of the building blocks, which would mean that seventh grade would be nearly impossible because seventh grade builds on sixth grade. Eighth grade builds on seventh grade. And so if you never really got what sixth grade was teaching, your life would become very difficult. In the same way, on a much grander level, that which happens is happening as a result of our past karma. It's not about rewards and punishments. It's not like the school saying, oh, you were bad, we're going to hold you back. It's not that. It's the universe saying, here are the seeds you planted. Here's the way that they flower into trees. Therefore, this is what now grows in your garden. So that's one direction. That's the, I have planted seeds in the past that have borne fruit today, and that's why I am where I am today. But there's also another directionality, which is today as the seed for the tree that you need to have in your garden tomorrow. So another way to think about it is due to your karmic package, due to that which is going to be most conducive for your spiritual evolvement, your unfolding, your opening, you need to have a certain experience in life. The universe needs to give you that experience. But in order to have that experience, because the universe doesn't just, you know, time warp people. You don't find yourself suddenly, you know, in an entirely different part of the world. You actually had to show up at an airport or a train station or a bus station. You had to get on. It's not like you just, you know, find yourself suddenly somewhere because the universe deemed it right. You may not know why you came, but you know how you got there. You know that you sat on a flight or you sat on a bus or you sat on a train. And so in order to give you the experience that the universe needs you to have, today could be the seed for that. And so one way of thinking about it is all of the seeds of the past brought you here because we could say you needed for your unfoldment to hear what's happening in satsang tonight. Okay? That's one way of understanding it, is that all of that which brought you here was because of that which was going to be asked and spoken, and that you on your journey needed to hear that, needed to experience that for your next step. But another way of thinking about it is that the universe has a plan. I mean, let's even be more creative writing. Let's say that you are supposed to meet someone who's going to be the person you're going to marry. Okay? The universe has to figure out how to get you guys to meet. So maybe you came into Rishikesh this afternoon, but you were going to fly back to Delhi tonight for a meeting that you had. But then something in you said, no, you know what? I really want to stay for satsang. I've heard about that satsang. I've been meaning to go. I really want to stay. Chalo, I'll change my plans. I'll stay for satsang. And when you walk out of here tonight, walk down on the banks of Ganga. Suddenly there, at that moment, you meet the person you were supposed to meet. But if you had left 6 hours ago, you wouldn't have met her. And so the satsang, rather than being the fruit of the seeds that were planted, became the seed that actually the purpose that it served was simply to hold you back in Rishikesh for another few hours so that you could meet that person on your way out. So those are two different directional ways. One is the past has led up to this moment because this is what it's about. And another possibility is what it's about is where you're going to go from here, but to get there, you needed to be here. And either way, it doesn't mean it doesn't matter. And of course, we never really know. They're just different ways of thinking about it. Sometimes we know. I mean, sometimes something hits us and we think, okay, yeah, now I know why I needed this. That had to happen. But what's most important is just to know that wherever we are, we're there for a reason. And whether it's the fruit bearing from seeds I've planted in the past, that I need what this moment is giving me. I need to learn. I need to experience what this moment is giving me. Or that this moment is itself a seed that I'm planting for a tree that's going to bear fruit in my life at a different time. or in a different way. And in many, many cases, by the way, it's both. It's not one or the other. I gave, you know, two very specific, and particularly the marriage one, you know, just sort of a creative writing, romanticized example of it. But in most cases, the reason is manyfold. One reason is it's the fruit of seeds I've planted in the past. That's why I'm here. And here in this moment, I am gaining something, whether something from the outer situation or something from my inner situation, that I'm gaining for a reason. A lot of times when we go through difficult times, we go through pain and suffering, it fits in this category. Yeah, it's there for a reason. Some seeds from the past are bearing fruit in this moment. And in experiencing that suffering of this moment, I'm actually learning about a place within myself that I never would have known existed if I didn't have this suffering. I'm finding a grounding, a centering, an anchoring that I never would have found if this didn't happen. And so in that case, it's both. And most things really are. But what we know for 100% sure is there's always a reason. The seeds are planted not by the universe. The seeds are planted by us, by our thoughts and our mind, as you've said, by both of them, by our actions as well. Our thoughts lead to actions. If a thought doesn't lead to an action, it doesn't actually plant a seed. The seed of a thought impacts us when it blossoms into an action or inaction. If it's just a passing thought, and we don't act on it, it won't plant a seed in us, which is very, very good. Pooja Swamiji, my guru, says that this is the grace of the Kali Yuga. That the Kali Yuga, the Yuga we're in right now, is so difficult, is the most difficult of all the eras. And that in the other yugas, you really did get karma, karmic fruits, from simply thoughts. But that the grace of the Kali Yuga, because it's so filled with darkness, is that we've been given a little bit of leeway. And so we don't actually get karma for thoughts we have until and unless we act on them, which for most of us is a really good thing. I mean, everybody can let out a really big sigh of relief because so many of us have thoughts that we don't act on because, you know, we have consciences and we have willpower and we have sanskaras and ethics and values that say, no, that's wrong. But we may have thoughts of, oh God, I wish, things that aren't so nice necessarily. But the Kali Yuga lets us off of that, thankfully. And so the seeds that get planted are seeds of actions. Now, of course, actions only come from thoughts. So it all begins with a thought. But don't berate yourself for thoughts, because as long as you can prevent yourself from acting on them, as long as you have the discipline, the willpower, the values, the ethics to work with your thoughts, whether they be of anger or greed or lust or whatever they may be, as long as you don't act on them, they're not going to plant any seeds in your life. So since the law of karma has been kind to us, we should be kind to ourselves as well. And have compassion for the fact that, yeah, we do have thoughts that are not necessarily thoughts we'd like to have. But this is why we practice meditation. It's why we practice chanting our mantra. It's why we practice introspection. To understand, why do I have those thoughts? What is it that makes me so angry? What inner emptiness am I looking to fill through my greed or through my lust? What emptiness is it inside me that makes me feel so jealous and therefore angry? That's really important personal insight. So instead of saying, oh my God, you're horrible, look, it's another lustful thought, or oh my God, you're horrible, look, it's another greedy thought, or look, it's another anger thought, or look, you're jealous again, you're horrible. Rather than that, we use it for introspection. What is it? And then we use meditation to help us understand, I'm not my thoughts. I'm not my thoughts. They're patterns of chemical and electrical activity in my brain. They've been put there by my culture, by my society, by my family, by an interaction thereof. I'm not my thoughts. And the more we meditate, the more power and control we have over our thoughts, and the more our thoughts change. And the more we introspect on them, the more that anger or greed or lust or whatever it may be starts to dissolve. And so the seeds in our life are being planted by us, by our actions. But you're better off watching your thoughts than just watching your actions, because sometimes with actions you find yourself halfway through the action before you even realized you were doing it. And so if you can develop a habit of watching your thoughts, you're one step ahead. Because again, no action comes without a thought preceding it. So if you can really develop the skill of watching the thoughts, that's what mindfulness is. What am I doing with my mind also? Not just what am I doing with my hands, but what's my mind doing? I begin by watching my hand, but ultimately I watch my mind. So begin with picking up, picking up, picking up, picking up. Okay, so that's beginner's course. And then it's, anger coming, anger coming, anger coming, fear. Constriction. Advanced course. But the same watchfulness. And if I know anger coming, constriction, separation, that's what my mind is doing. When I get angry, I go from being connected in one to being separate. I go from being vast to being contracted and constricted. If I can watch that, then I'm able to stop myself before I act out of that anger. So I'm able to prevent any seeds, karmic seeds, from being planted.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's R-A-I-N-N dot RAIN.org.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me.
Remember that spirituality is the truth of who we are. So it's not like becoming a rocket scientist. We're going to inner space, not outer space. Outer space, you need a lot of degrees. Inner space, you don't need any degree. So it's coming home to you. So, and this is very important because there are a lot of people who would convince you that in order to be spiritual, you need to buy this or do this or have a certificate in that or do this course or whatever it may be. It's coming back to the self, which means that my only task is freeing myself of that which isn't spirit, right? If we say spirituality is commitment to seeing the world as spirit, have a body, so it's not about letting go of the body, but it's about what is it that keeps me from living as spirit? What is it that keeps me from being awake, from being connected? Well, it's things like my ego. It's which puts me in a box. And again, as I was saying in one of my circles earlier today, the ego is the same that tells you you're the worst as the best. Most of us think of ego as arrogance, but the ego is just as much the one who says you're stupid, you're worthless, as the one who says you're brilliant, you're the best. They're just different aspects on the same pendulum swing of the ego. So the ego keeps me away from that. A sense of being not enough keeps me from that, because then I need to look to the world to fill me. So whether through buying things, whether through eating things, whether through drinking things, whether through any one of numerous ways, I'm going to try to fill myself. These are things that pull me away from spirit. Not the food itself, not the material possessions themselves, but my drive for them to fill me. These are the sorts of things that keep us away from living as spirit. So that desire that says, I need this, I need that. If I had this, if I had that, if I were this, if I were that. The ego, I am this, you are that. All of the things that put us in boxes. Fear. But fear, of course, is just another reflection of not enoughness. Because fear is the thing that says, oh my God, I'm going to fail. Oh my God, people are going to laugh at me. Oh my God, I'm going to make a fool of myself. Okay. Chances are, we're all going to fail at some point in our life. You hear lots of stories. I can't pull them off out of my head at the moment, but lots and lots of stories of the geniuses of history and how they all failed. I mean, how Einstein failed math and how this one failed this, you know, just all of these stories. How many times someone's brilliant invention was rejected? How many times someone's transformative book was rejected? How many, whatever it may be. We all fail. If I'm coming from a place of I'm not enough, well, then I can't fail. Because then the fear of what people will say, the fear of the humiliation, the fear of the shame, the fear of experiencing my own not enoughness is going to keep me from even trying. And so it's going to keep me boxed in. According to my roles, I'm going to need to keep hearing voices in my head that say, no, 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 don't try that. That's a stupid idea. You can never do it. You're not smart enough. So ego, fear, desires, all of that. All of which, by the way, have been programmed into us. I spent
this afternoon talking about the authentic self with three different, you know, groups of people. And we peeled apart, well, what's not authentic? And it's all that which we've been programmed to believe. Programmed by our parents, programmed by society, programmed by the culture, programmed by well-meaning but a little misdirected educators. And I've adopted those. So in order to connect spiritually, I need to allow myself to be free of those. And beautifully, one of the easiest ways of freeing yourself of those things is just recognizing them. You know, it's what I refer to as the Wizard of Oz phenomenon. The minute you pull back the curtain and actually look at what it is you're running from and fearful of, it actually turns out not to be very big, but to be very, very small with a projector. That it just projects all over our psyche. Ah, lots of darkness, lots of badness, lots of worthlessness, lots of this, lots of that. But it's just the way we've been programmed. And it's actually very small. But we have to have the courage to pull back the curtain and look at it. And then it literally tends to dissipate before our eyes. And where it doesn't, you bring in tools to counter that, counter those messages with the opposite message.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. When we were speaking about the authentic self today, we were speaking about it more in the world, what it looks like when we move through the world from a place of authenticity rather than from a place of the masks and the, you know, roles and the costumes and all of that that we wear. When you go a step deeper, though, on a spiritual level, the truest, highest self is soul spirit, which is that which is unchanging. And it's important to just draw a little distinction here for you, because the answer to your question is going to depend on how we define authentic self. Again, to which there is no right answer, and it really depends what world we're in. So here in a satsang world, I'm much more likely to define it as spirit, as soul, as infinity, as the divine in you. When we're speaking more in a discussion that's more geared to how am I going to go out in the world and be a leader, so we're not speaking so much about a formless divinity of which I am just a reflection. But rather, we're talking actually about something that is uniquely you and that is constant, not in the way that the soul and spirit is constant, life after life, birth after birth, from me to you, but rather that is constant situation to situation. So for example, most of us know the phenomenon of being one way in a certain place and a different way in a different place. Now, there's nothing wrong with that as long as we are aware that we're playing a role. So if I'm the CEO of a company, I have to act differently in the office place than I act with my husband or wife or children at home. Nobody would expect me, even someone saying, be your most authentic self, no one would expect me to walk into my business and be the same me who is there sitting on, you know, lying on the couch in my therapist's office, or me lying in bed with a spouse, or curled up in my mother's arms. I mean, there's no one who would say to you, yeah, you should deal with your employees just like you were curled up in your mother's arms. But in order to be authentic, I need to be aware that I'm playing a role. And there's nothing wrong with that. So here's what it looks like. I am me, my authentic self, whatever that means to me. I am love. I am consciousness. I am whatever it is for me. Again, to which there is no right answer. I am able to express that unencumbered, unhindered, uncensored in certain places. Hopefully. Hopefully we all at least have a couple of places or at least one place, even if it's just your own meditation, where you can express that, where you can be who you are. Not the programmed you, not the you who says, damn, why didn't I get the promotion? I put on a happy face, but really I'm so mad. That's not authentic self. Not that that's not important to have someone to express it to, but don't confuse that with authentic self. That's programmed, competitive, fearful, jealous self. The authentic self is the you when you feel full and whole and complete and enough, and that experience that if I never achieve anything, get anything, do anything else in my life in this moment, I am full and whole. And that fullness and wholeness has an energy to it, which knows how it has to move through the world, which is what we could call my authentic self in action. But going back for a moment, so with someone or with your meditation or with your dog or with your tree, you're able to just be that. I have had some of the most extraordinary moments of my life on a deeply personal level with trees. Literally. Just with hands on trees and an experience of the pulse of the tree and the pulse in me and that oneness. I have had ecstatic moments of tears and sobbing, and many of them actually. It doesn't have to be necessarily in a conversation with a human being. But a moment in which you are able to just experience and express the fullness of who you are. Then you've got a job. Maybe you're an employee, maybe you're an employer. So you get up in the morning and you're going to go to work. Well, so you sit, and I always encourage people to do this. You're not going to go into the office in a state of ecstasy like you are with your tree or with your spouse or with you, wherever it may be. You've got a role to play. Got a business to run. And as you get up in the morning, take a few moments, sit in meditation. Or if for whatever reason that's not a practice that feels comfortable, as you get out of the shower, before you put on your clothes, literally visualize putting on a costume, putting on a mask. You're going out there, you're going to play a role. You have to play the role. You have to do the CEO thing. And you go out there and you do it. But you do it as the authentic self playing a role. So for example, if I were an actor, let's say in a play, and in the play, one day the director said to me, kill this person. And he meant really, not like with a fake knife, but really take a knife and kill this person. You're, you know, a murderer and I want reality on my set. I want this guy really dead. I want real blood. Well, I wouldn't do it, no matter how committed I am to being an actor. Because remember, there's an authentic me wearing the costume and the mask of the murderer that says, no, wait. So I'll do the lines, I'll do the show, but I'm going to do them from a place of me that knows what's right, what's not. And in the same way, when you move through the world, you've got your, you know, CEO costume, and you've got your this costume, and you're that, whatever it may be. And that's all fine. And at the end of the day, when you come home and you take a shower, literally imagine that costume, that makeup washing off. Because the problem is not that we play roles. The problem is that we start to think we are the roles. And the makeup and the mask get so stuck to our face that we forget who we are. And that's when we lose our ability to be authentic. And so, yes, the authentic self stays the same through all these circumstances, but it may put on a different mask in different places. But the wearer of the mask is the same, and your awareness of the wearer of the mask is the same. Your connection with the wearer of the mask is the same, and your ability to access the wearer of the mask is the same. No matter how good an actor, if he was about to walk out or she was about to walk out on the stage, and as they're walking out, they see a text on their phone that says, your mom died, or your child died, or there's, you know, whatever it may be. They're not going to be able to go out and play that role. They're only able to do it until and unless it interferes with the authentic self. So the masks, the roles, that which we play, and play them well, by all means. This is the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. Arjun was not a murderer. He was a warrior. But his role in that drama of Dharma, you could say, was to be the one who, in order to uphold the Dharma, had to kill. He had to be able to recognize. Now, of course, it's a different situation, but he had to be able to recognize that his authentic self, his highest self, was this upholder of Dharma. And of course, it makes things much easier when you literally have God standing in your chariot saying, here's exactly what you're supposed to do. And you don't have to figure it out yourself. So he had it easy in that way. But he was able to do this not by thinking of himself as a murderer, not by becoming a murderer, but by upholding his authentic self as a warrior of Dharma. And having faith in Krishna, who said, this is the drama of Dharma that you now need to play. And so as you play your different roles, and you play them sincerely and you play them well, just remember to stay connected to who's the one who's playing the role. Because then you'll always know who I am in this, and you'll always have access back to that. And you won't ever forget, because your roles will change. Today it's the employee, tomorrow it's the employer. But the truth is, neither of them is you. And you don't want to get your face stuck with the role of the guy who licks the stamps, or the guy who fills the coffee machine, or the guy who tells people to lick the stamps. Because we're not any of those. And to be able to literally take all of that off at the end of the day, so that you're ready then tomorrow, play it again.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin, with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. I would say all of them. Now, you don't necessarily need to jump into all of them this moment. But here's why. Bhakti yoga, devotion, love. Easiest way to connect. Love God. Love God in form, love God without form, love God in the form of the tree in your backyard. It doesn't matter. But just love. The energy of love, when it runs through your body, is transformational. That which we become, do, manifest due to the power of love is more than we do due to the power of anything else. There's no other power in the world that is responsible for what the power of love is responsible for. So definitely you need bhakti. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean you must sit and perform puja for an hour a day. I'm not saying that. That's the ritual. The point of the ritual is to make us love God. But as you know in your own relationships, if someone really loves you, but they're not bringing you flowers, that's okay. Because you know they really love you. The flowers only become important when you start to wonder, does he still love me?
And then you start to realize, my God, it's been like a year since he's brought me any flowers. Oh my God, maybe he doesn't love me. But if the love is flowing and you're feeling the love every day, you're not wondering, where are the flowers? And if somebody brings you flowers or sends you flowers, but you know they're just to buy you in some way, they've really messed up, they don't want to get in trouble, maybe you're their boss, some flowers, it's not going to impact you because you know this isn't sent with love, this is just sent to try to buy me. In the same way with God. That which we offer in our puja, we offer it to bring us closer to God. If you're performing puja without love, it's better leave the flowers on the trees, leave the milk in the cows, give it to some poor person. God doesn't need that from us. The rituals are there to bring up within us an experience of love. In the same way you're cooking a meal for a loved one, well, as you're cooking it, the whole act of cooking it, love is growing in you as you're cooking. Oh, he likes a little bit of spice. Okay, so I'm going to put in just the right amount. You know, maybe a little more. He really likes spice. Okay, just one more chili. Right? And the whole act of cooking brings you closer and closer to love. Or you're painting a picture for someone you love. Every stroke of that painting brings up more and more love for you. So have bhakti, but don't worry if it's not, I sit in puja. That's okay. But make sure you love God. And make sure that there's some expression of your love to God, even if it's just, I love you, God. Really, that's enough. Puja Swamiji tells a beautiful story of a young boy in temple. And it's time for the silent prayer. And everybody becomes quiet, everybody closes their eyes. And the boy says to God, he says, God, I don't know any prayer. He says, the only thing I know by heart is my ABCs. Because I learned that in school. He says, I know those by heart. And he said, but I know one thing, which is all the prayers come out of these ABCs. And so I'll tell you what, I'm just going to sing you the ABCs and you make up whatever prayer you like. And whenever Puja Swamiji tells that story, he always concludes it by saying, the point of the story is God loves that boy much more for his ABCs than all of the people who are chanting perfect mantras or prayers, but while their minds are making shopping lists. So it's all about the love. So have bhakti. Karma yoga. You have to have it. Now, karma yoga, usually when we talk about it in this context, we mean service, we mean seva, we mean doing good deeds. Well, when you love someone, you can't really say you love them very much if you refuse to do anything for them. Right? I mean, if you had a loved one who kept telling you, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, and you're really sick one day and you say, could you bring me a glass of water? They say, nope. I just do the loving. I don't do this with the work. Only bhakti, no karma. You'd be like, hey, well, what kind of love is this? I need a glass of water. What do you mean you won't bring me a glass of water? How can you possibly love me and refuse to bring me a glass of water? So karma yoga stems out of love for God. And again, it doesn't matter whether we're loving God in a specific form or whether we love the creation. We serve because the creation is There's two ways to do it. Either the creation is God, and I love God, so I serve, or the creation is me. Because my consciousness is expanded to such an extent through my practice of meditation, through my spiritual awareness, that I actually recognize myself, my capital S, full, high, complete self, in the others. And so I serve the same way that I scratch my nose when it itches, or I limp when one of my legs is hurt, or I do anything else for myself. Well, when my sense of self expands, I serve. Lastly, sannyas. Well, sannyas is certainly not a requirement on any level. To be taken early in life, the scriptures and the teachings are full of householder sages and rishis, sages. If you read the stories in the scriptures, there's very few sannyasis. It's much more householder rishis, householder saints. But as our life goes on, right, we're given in the Hindu tradition, there's a sense of four, what we call ashrams, four stages of life that are prescribed for everyone. First stage is your student years, brahmacharya ashram. Your second stage is your marriage and childbearing and career and whatnot, grihastashram stage. Then the kids are now grown, they're settled. Vanprasthashram stage, you start being able to pull away. You no longer need to be changing diapers and bringing home the bread. And, you know, Vanprasthashram stage, you start to move away. And then ultimately the stage of sannyas, which is that final stage in that way of going back to God, of literally unencumbering ourselves from the world so that we can be one with God. But of course, there's many of us who choose to skip around and take sannyas earlier. But there's no requirement for that. You can practice bhakti and karma yoga, and you should practice them in every stage. And then, if you feel inspired, called to move into the sannyas ashram at a younger age, fantastic. If you don't, at least be sure that you get into it at the appropriate age of that final stage of life. You don't want to go out kicking and screaming of attachment to the world. So that's where the vanprast and sannyas stages come in, is look, you're going out. Rather than going out kicking and screaming and digging your fingernails futilely into the world, go out in a way that you're planning already your next destination. How can I use those years to already be planning? Because our next birth is based on where I was at the end of this one. So if I go out kicking and screaming, I'm going to have a very different experience in my next birth than if I go out immersed in God.
This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.